So I give you a very funny fellow and a fine gentleman and a great soul, Joe Penner.
Thanks, Dale. Good evening, folks.
Say, Joe, I've heard people say about one star or another, Gee, he's a lucky guy. He's got a swell home, a couple of big cars, makes a lot of money. What a lucky guy. You've heard something like that, too, haven't you, Joe?
Oh, that's what I guess.
Well, now, if you'll be a good boy and hold still for the next 10 or 12 minutes, maybe we can show the folks that, well, luck isn't necessarily what puts a star on top.
Oh, so you want me to be kind of a guinea pig, huh?
Oh, not exactly, but I think your story is so dramatic, Joe, so very human, that it'll serve for our experiment. Since we've got so much ground to cover in a few minutes, we'd better get started, huh?
Okay.
All right, you were born in Hungary, weren't you, Joe?
Yeah, mud bets get it. I left there 22 years ago to see what this America was all about.
Not yet, but I'll try to remember that, Joe. Did you come to America by yourself? Were your parents already here?
Well, my father came here first to look for the gold in the streets, you know. You'd be surprised how folks in the old country thought about America. But anyway, he worked in shipyards and coal yards and finally for the Ford Motor Company. And then he sent for me and my mother. And, of course, my mother... he sent for me and my mother when I was only 3, you know. And I lived with my grandparents until I was 10, and then my folks sent for me.
So you made the trip across the Atlantic by yourself, huh, Joe?
No, they put tags on my grandfather and me and shipped us both to Detroit. And I don't remember my mother, and when we got off the train, a fine-looking woman rushed up to me and threw her arms around me and started hugging and kissing me, and I didn't know what the score was, but I kept thinking, what a pretty woman. Gee, I got a nice mother.
Well, then you and your grandfather moved right in, did you, Joe?
That's right. And the first thing I did was get in Dutch.
Trouble, huh?
My mother was washing some clothes, and I was wearing a bright red turtleneck sweater that wasn't any lily, so I tossed it into the wash tub and went out into the little yard to look over America.
I suppose Mama found the sweater in her nice white linens.
Exactly. Mother didn't miss, and all the snowy linens faded a beautiful red. But I catch on quickly, and I didn't do it again.
I'll bet you didn't, Joe. How about school? You began to learn English right away, didn't you?
Yeah, but it was awful.
Learning English was awful?
No, not so much that, but going to school, you see, I was in the 8th grade in Hungary, and over here they put me in the kindergarten with a bunch of babies, and gave me an inferiority complex that took me years to overcome. I left school when I was 14 in the first grade of high school.
Then you started right into show business, huh, Joe?
No, but what I did was helpful later. See, I sang soprano in the church choir.
Mr. Penner, you were a soprano?
Yeah, but not anymore.
Oh, of course not. No, not anymore. But you were singing, Joe.
I sang in the choir and sold papers and played amateur nights and entered all the Charlie Chaplin contests. You know, every kid did in those days. And then I worked in foundries and... And then I lost my arm in the foundry. I fell against some sheet metal and slipped on the oily floor.
You know, it's too bad, Joe.
No, but the worst, though, was that I was awfully afraid my mother would worry, because somehow the arm didn't hurt me so much as that I was afraid of her. You know, kids are funny that way.
Well, naturally, you didn't want your mother to feel badly. Oh. Well, where'd you go from the foundry, Joe?
Well, there I had so many jobs to take hours to tell you about them. My dad went to work for Ford when... He first announced $5 a day, you know. That was big money, too. And a little bit later, I went out and sold magazines from door to door. And the first day, I worked about 4 hours and made $6. And
that's a lot of dough, too.
The folks were amazed, you know. They really thought that there was something to that gold in the streets idea after all.
Well, did you do this working your way through college stunt very long, Joe?
Not on my own. I got a crew together, and I became the crew manager. So I used to send the fellas out. And the one that sold the most magazines, I would reward him.
Oh, sort of a bonus, huh?
Well, sort of. I let him have lunch with me. I slept till noon, so while the fellow was eating lunch, I was eating breakfast.
Pretty soft living, Penner.
But it didn't last long, Armstrong.
How come?
Well, one morning I woke up and my roommate was gone.
Ah, don't tell me, Joe. I know. Gone with your clothes, your money, everything.
Exactly. How did you know?
Those things that happened to me, too, Joe.
Well, so I sent home for money to pay off the crew, and then I got the itch to travel again, and, well, you know, I always like to travel.
So you went into show business, huh?
No, not yet. I sold alleged hand-colored pictures and fiddle lessons.
Fiddle lessons, huh?
Yeah, I was legitimate, too. I'd walk past the school, and When I saw a studious kid with glasses, maybe, I'd say, how would you like to have this little fiddle free, see? The kid usually wanted it, so I'd tell him to go home and tell his mother I'd be there that afternoon. Then I'd sell her 20 lessons, get $12 for the last 6 lessons, and give the kid the fiddle free. Cost $6, you see, and I'd have the $6 to myself.
I find it.
Sometimes I made as high as $90 a day when I worked hard.
Well, that's pretty good. That's when you learned to play the violin, huh?
Sure, when I didn't have customers, I practiced those lessons myself, but I didn't have to pay the $12 for the last 6 lessons. It was my own fiddle.
So then you went into show business, eh?
No, not for a while. I did a lot of other jobs, but then one day I went to work for a magician, Rex the Mind Reader.
Rex the Mind Reader. What did you do in the act, Joe?
Well, Rex was one of those guys who'd answer questions for the audience and all that. You know, they'd write their questions on a card, and Rex would drop them in a concealed bag on the stage, and then I'd slip my hand in and get in and answer them on other cards. Then I'd give these cards to Rex, and then he'd play around with his crystal ball and read my answers to the questions through the crystal ball, and, well, that was his act.
Sounds something like a racket to me, but exciting, huh?
All was all right, but the fellow wasn't a very hot-shot mind reader, so I didn't stay with him long. The next job I got was at a tap show.
What do you mean, Joe, a tap show?
Well, a tap show plays condensed versions of plays and things.
Oh, I see. So you went to work in a tap show. Go on.
Well, it was in Detroit, and there were all together 8 in the cast, and the girls used to wear paper costumes. You know, paper like picnic napkins.
It's a good thing the roof of that theater didn't leak when the girls were on the stage.
Don't be ridiculous. It was that kind of a theater, and the roof did leak, but the girls got out of the way. Anyhow, I went to work for the show, and...
How'd you get the job, Joe? Just apply to the producer for it?
Well, in a way, I did. I used to watch that show until I was dizzy out front, you know what I mean?
You're out in the audience,
yeah. Well, I was fascinated anyway by anything connected with the theater, and so I knew the show backwards and forwards, and one day, one of the Tommies got sick, so to make a long story short, I went backstage and asked for the job.
Ah, just like in the movies. That's how you got your big chance.
Oh, no, I didn't. I pleaded with the fella for 2 hours nearly, and I told him I won the first prize in all the amateur contests, which I did, and I told him I could do Dutch and straight and sing, dance, anything he wanted, and finally I must have worn him down because he told me to go on.
So you went on, and then you clicked, huh?
Well, people liked me, so I got $35 a week with that show until we went to Toledo.
And in Toledo?
Well, the guy who gave me the job skipped out with everything we owed him.
Again?
Took money, all the salary, all his clothes, wardrobe, everything, and we were left higher than the kite, no jobs.
What happened, Joe?
Well, this fellow was supposed to pay the hotel bill and take care of everything, and we were sitting in the hotel one night, and the night that we found out he skipped, and a knock came on the door, and in walked a couple of the cops. Come on, boys, let's go.
And I know, boom, they tossed you into the Iron Theater, huh?
Yeah, they took us to jail, but we didn't know what it was all about.
Well, were you in long, Joe?
Well, not very. We got it all straightened out, but I learned something funny about myself in that place.
What was that, Joe?
Well, we were waiting for release to be taken care of. They put me in the cell by myself, and I wasn't so bad, and I knew I was in for good, but nonetheless, when the door slammed shut, I really went crazy. See, I was only 17 at the time, but the idea of being locked, well, it just drove me batty. I yelled and screamed and raised such a fuss that the jailer finally came, and I told him what was bothering me, and so he left the door just a little bit ajar, and
that made everything all right, huh?
Yeah. And to this day, I can't stand being locked in a room, no matter how big it is.
Oh, claustrophobia, huh?
What?
I say claustrophobia. That's the medical term meaning fear of being confined.
Medical term or not, who likes to be locked up?
Well, not me, boy. What happened next on your very lucky way to being a star, Joe?
Well, I was still a long way from where I am now, Dale, and I had a dozen jobs fall in my face. I was broke and hungry more times than I like to remember, and then one day, a carnival came to town.
Oh, carnivals. I like carnivals, Joe. Go on from there.
Well, one of the carnymen gave me a billboard to read, you know, the trade paper of the circuses and shows and all that. So I saw an ad in there, see, and it said, number one comic must do so-and-so and have this and that to offer salary no object.
So you answered the ad?
Sure, I wrote him a letter, but I didn't expect to hear anything more about it, so when I did get an answer, I nearly hit the ceiling. The manager told me to come join the show in Warren, Ohio, but I was broke, so I pawned my overcoat, my fiddle, and went to Warren. And
when you got there, you were all set, weren't you, Joe?
Don't be silly. When I met the manager, he said, "Where are your trunks?" Well, I was wearing everything I owed in the world, and he asked me about my fiddle, and I told him I'd forgotten to bring it. Well, he nearly went crazy and told the stage manager to toss me out, and there I was in a stage town. And
out of a job, no dough, no fiddle, no overcoat.
So I had to plead with him for an hour, and he finally gave me the job at $20 a week, and, gee, I was glad to get it. You see, I forgot to tell you, Dale, that just before I left Detroit, the hotel I was living in burned to the ground. All I saved was my fiddle and my overcoat, which I already hocked.
What an easy life you had. In your spare time, Joe, did you have any trouble keeping out from being run over? Tell me this. What happened to your job in Warren?
Oh, well, the manager finally let me go to work, and he told me to get my act together with a straight man. Well, he was a Greek.
Good-looking.
Yeah, good-looking guy, but his dialect was thicker than park your carcasses. I'm a comedian having to get laughs from a guy who's killing him every time he opens his mouth. Well, after a few months, that show was history, and I was out of a job again.
Being out of a job was no novelty to you, I guess, Joe. What was the next big step up?
Well, it was a burlesque show. Pretty good one, too. And when I joined the show, I stayed up all night writing out my act in longhand. Next day, the straight man and I got together, and I gave him the script, and he took one look at it and said, "Boy," he said, "I've been a straight man for 20 years. I know the act you're going to do, so whatever you say, I'll say the right thing."
Well, did he say the right thing, Joe?
You should ask. I tried to explain it. I wanted him to do it my way, but he wouldn't have any part of it. So when I went on, I was supposed to say, "Have you seen Susabella?" And he was supposed to say, "No, she hasn't been here all day."
But he didn't say that.
No, he didn't say that. When I said, "Have you seen Susabella?" this would-be straight man replied, "I never heard of her." Well, I nearly dropped dead. You don't understand. I said, "Have you seen Susabella?"
So what happened?
Well, so this big moose jumped on me and began kicking me around and says, "Oh, you won't talk, huh? Oh, why is that, eh?" They start pacing me more and they start an argument and they mop up the floor and tear my clothes and everything.
So how did the act go, Joe?
Well, it was sensational, Dale, but the guy nearly killed me. After the show, the straight man said to me, "Well," he said, "what did I tell you? I knew we'd panic him." See, I was black and blue, and I thought of doing 4 shows a day and 7 days a week.
In a lot of weeks and a month and so on. It doesn't sound so very funny. You didn't have to do that very long, though, Joe.
No, thank heavens. Next week, we got a new straight man, and he did the act the way I wanted it.
That was a bigger success then than the rough and tumble stuff, huh?
Yeah, the people liked it, and from then, I got much better at jobs as I went along, you know.
Well, where'd you go from there, Joe? Just hit the high spots, will you?
Well, I played stock for 4 months. I did more burlesque and a few nightclub days, but I was doing pretty good then.
Joe, let me get personal for a minute. How about the salary? You were getting more than your $20 a week and your 4 beatings a day, weren't you?
Oh, sure. My salary jumped to 60, then 75, then 100, and went to 250, 350, and so on. And finally, 1932, I was lucky enough to be hitting around 1250.
Oh, you are a comedian. You just make me laugh. You were lucky enough to be getting $12.50. Joe, I'd say you had courage enough and talent enough.
Well, thanks, Dale. Of course, I had a lot of breaks, too, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Some of them, however, were pretty rough. That mopping up the floor department doesn't sound like any child's play. Joe, we've only got a minute or two left. How'd you happen to get into radio?
Well, they liked me so well back east that they offered me $7.50 to go on a Rudy Valley hour scene. Of course, I didn't think much of trying to be funny to a microphone, and I didn't think I'd be any good, and so I said to my wife, I says, "This radio isn't for me," I told her, but I did the show finally.
And you panicked them?
Well, the people liked it, and of course they had the customers, and the funny thing about their broadcast.
Yeah, what is that, Joe?
Well, when I went to the fights at Madison Square Garden a day or so later.
Yeah, go on.
Well, every time the fires would stall and weren't in there slugging people all over the place would yell, "Don't ever do that, you nasty man," and things like that, so I figured this radio had a pretty powerful appeal.
And a wide coverage, too, Joe. Times proved that all right. Did you go right on to your own show after the Valley broadcast?
No, not right away, Dale. I did 6 guest shots with Rudy, and I guess the people must have liked me because I was signed to do the Baker's broadcast, and I stayed on that show for 2 years, and I went to Europe in 1936 for 4 months, and then I came back to my present program.
Well, you were on the air out here about 3 o'clock in the afternoon for a while, Joe. The 8 o'clock hour is much better for you, isn't it?
Well, I think so. It gives me a chance to reach the grown-ups as well as the children.
How long have you been doing this present series, Joe?
Well, I'm finishing up my second year, and I think it'll be 2 years in June now.
Well, Joe, I think you're doing a swell job now. I know you'll keep right on climbing, too. You know, one thing makes me a little unhappy.
What's that, Bill?
Well, this interview tonight, we haven't done any more than just touch the highlights of your life and your career, and only a few of them. Maybe you'll come back again, and we can go on from where we have to leave off tonight, huh?
Well, I'd love to, anytime you say.
Wait a minute, Joe. Come in.
Hello, Mr. Penner. Hello. I'd like to ask you a question.
Yeah.
How do you do that funny laugh of yours?
Just a minute, please. I'm sorry, Joe. This is Jimmy Vandeveer. You see, he's going to take over the next two Radiolio programs. Jimmy, you're supposed to take over next week. You're just a week early.
Oh, it's next week. Well, Bill, I'm sorry about that, Dale. I didn't mean to intrude.
Well, that's okay. You can listen, Jim, but you mustn't talk until next week. Say, Joe, I just happened to think, how do you do that funny laugh of yours?
you don't want to hear that.
Oh, yes, I do. Don't we, Jimmy? Don't answer that. You're not supposed to talk till next week. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, you asked for it. So long, Jimmy. And thanks, Dale. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Joe, and thanks.